This is Hear Me Out. I'm Celeste Headley. For the first time, the parents of a school shooter are facing manslaughter charges for the actions of their son. James and Jennifer Crumbly are facing a decade, maybe more, in prison, but they did not pull the trigger that killed four students in 2021. Their son, now a legal adult, did. At the core here is a question about how and whether we can prevent mass shootings by enforcing legal consequences for perpetrators. Are we addressing violence by punishing anyone and everyone whose actions might have led to a tragic end? Or are we missing the bigger picture?
Everyone has so much energy around the Crumblies, and I'm very sympathetic to that. But focusing on the parents right now, that's what we have. That's terrible. That's not how policy should work, and this is a nightmare.
Kim Whaley, a professor and legal analyst, joins us in just a moment.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome back to Hear Me Out. I'm Celeste Headley. Late last month, Ethan Crumbly turned 18. If his name sounds familiar, it's because when he was 15 years old, he brought a gun to school in Oakland County, Michigan, and opened fire. Four people were killed, seven injured. There have been nearly 85 school shootings since the year 2000 in the U.S., but there's a unique twist to Crumbly's case. Ethan's parents, James and Jennifer Crumbly, have also been found criminally liable for the shooting. They've been sentenced to 10 to 15 years in prison for involuntary manslaughter. They are, of course, intending to appeal. But this is the first time the parents of a mass killer have been found responsible for their child's crimes. So, as Ethan Crumbly transfers from a juvenile correctional facility to a protective custody unit for adults, should his parents be held accountable? Our guest today says the Crumbly parents aren't dangerous to society. They're scapegoats for a much bigger problem. Our guest is Kim Whaley, a law professor and writer. Welcome, Kim.
Thanks for having me, Celeste.
So you wrote a piece called "The Crumblies Are Being Scapegoated for America's Gun Failures." To start us off, can you give us a really brief sort of summary of your opinion here?
My opinion is less about fairness to the Crumblies, which I think the headline, which, you know, my editors choose, but the headline, I think people read that and thought, oh, you know, you're sort of forgiving what the Crumblies did. No, my argument is that in moving liability to parents in this way, we are taking our eye off the ball, which is that the real problem is the scourge of gun violence in the United States and the refusal of legislators, both at the congressional level and the state level, to enact common sense safety requirements around this kind of dangerous weapon, the kinds of common sense safety requirements that we have from anything from, you know, seat belts to, you know, minimum ages for purchasing, vaping mechanisms, all kinds of things. And people have lost sight of the fact that the reason that people are being killed in these numbers by guns, including children in high school, has to do with the failures of lawmakers and the United States Supreme Court, frankly, that is making it harder and harder, even for lawmakers, to pass reasonable gun restrictions to ensure public safety.
So, I mean, I agree with everything that you just said, but I think both things can be true. I think both the Crumblies, I think it can be both fair to hold the Crumblies accountable for what was egregious behavior, and it can be true that there's a larger problem with guns and an almost impossibility to pass any kind of common sense gun legislation. Would you agree?
It depends on sort of the scale of accountability. So sure, holding them accountable for negligence in protecting their children, you know, maybe a tort, some kind of financial penalty, But here, what we're talking about, the reason this one got so much national publicity, the reason this was covered by major news networks, is because the Crumblies were prosecuted and convicted as if they actually pulled the trigger, as if they were participated in some way in the killings, in the same way that someone might have been a bystander at the time, or in the school at the time, working with him to facilitate that. It opens up this major scope of liability that we've never seen before. I mean, if you have a car and you have a teenager and your kid runs over someone, we don't hold parents accountable unless they have crossed legal boundaries, like giving a underage child a car. Here in Michigan, at the time these crimes occurred, there was no requirement that there be guns locked up in the home. And so essentially what the jury did was hold the Crumblies accountable for not imposing within their homes the kind of reasonable restrictions that the state of Michigan was not willing to do until after these tragedies. The law changed in February of this year. But at the time, sure, you know, they obviously were not strong parents. They made a lot of seriously negligent mistakes, but turning that into a crime is a really different thing than saying they should be held accountable for not taking steps that were consistent with the gun laws in that state at the moment.
So a couple things here. Let me start with the fact that we've never seen this kind of liability before, because that's not entirely true. Yes, there's the property damage. If my son goes next door and takes a bat to my neighbor's windshield, then yeah, I have to replace that. But we have had examples of parents being held accountable for behavior, status offenses, behaviors that are illegal because the kid is under 18. And that includes, let's go back to your car example. If I supply my child with alcohol and then let him get behind the wheel of a car, and then he runs somebody over, there have been parents held accountable for that kind of behavior when they're letting somebody do something not only that's illegal because they're letting a minor drink, but there is at least a spirit of law in a number of states, and there's federal laws saying that you can gift a gun to a minor as long as they're using it for limited purposes, right? But there is precedent for holding parents accountable for behaviors that result in serious injury or even death.
Well, in your example, I think the critical fact was that they gave alcohol to a minor against the law, a law requiring that minors be a certain age before they can drink. What I'm saying is, if it would have been a very different case if that Michigan law had been in place and they had notice of the law and they violated the law and did not lock the guns up. I mean, essentially the theory here was, even though Michigan at the time had no restrictions on holding these weapons in the home and making sure that there were safety measures in place. And just be clear, the federal United States Congress has enacted years ago sweeping immunity laws that don't even require, that make it impossible virtually to sue gun manufacturers to require reasonable safety measures, right? You're talking about a car. We have all kinds of safety mechanisms on a car. We have seatbelt laws. We have airbags. We have legal limits on when you're supposed to stop, how fast you're supposed to drive, when you put your blinker on, all of these restraints. They're essentially saying, we as a society are going to allow the number one killer of children in the United States. It's 8 in 10 deaths in the United States are murders, I should say. 8 in 10 murders in the United States are caused by a firearm. We are awash in irresponsible gun use and possession in the United States. We can't even get national red flag laws, reasonable restrictions, gun safety. You know, you have to impose, have a certain kind of locking mechanism, or we have to have background checks to make sure criminals or people with severe mental illness. We can't do the most basic things, and we do it in other areas of tort law. So that sky's the limit. We as a country, we as a society are not going to impose those in large measure. But if a family goes along with that standard, we're going to hold them to a higher standard in their home. It's not negligent for our lawmakers to not keep the public safe, but we're going to impose a higher standard on parents. You need to impose in your household laws that we're not willing to do as a society. I'm essentially saying, Celeste, we should put our money where our mouths are. We should say, if the jury's right, and I think that this is outrageous. I have four children. It's inconceivable that you would have purchased a gun for a child like this and not paid attention to his cries for help and, you know, ignored his obvious need for some serious intervention, take him to a firing range, made comments about, I think the mother, there was something along the lines of, you know, hide your, don't let them see whatever. I mean, I can't remember. I don't have all the facts in my hands in this moment, but clearly there were lots of warning signs that the Crumbly should have done more with this weapon. My argument is, if we're pushing liability to individual parents, we are ignoring the huge problem in this country. If we believe the individual parents should be held liable, then we should also be voting for legislators who are going to impose those kinds of restrictions and those reasonable safety measures for the rest of us, like we do with cars, like we do with alcohol, like we do with cigarettes, like we do with other kinds of dangerous weapons. You have to be licensed specially to drive a truck. And those things get, you have to have them renewed. There are all kinds of background checks for all kinds of basic jobs, but not to have a weapon that more than 50% of the gun deaths in the United States are due to suicide. It is extremely dangerous to have it in your home. It's much more dangerous to have a gun in your home than it is safe to have a gun in your home because you're going to somehow, stop an intruder. To me, there's just like this disconnect, this psychological distortion to say, oh, these Crumblies are so awful, but then we're just looking and standing by the sidelines while we allow 400 million guns in this country to now the Supreme Court has held, even having a concealed carry law violates the Second Amendment. I mean, to me, it just makes no sense.
So we have to take a break, but there is a lot to talk about here. And I mean, I got to say, I agree with 90% of what you're saying, but there's still areas here in which I gotta push back, which I will do after a break. You're listening to Hear Me Out. I'm Celeste Headley, and we're talking about whether or not Ethan Crumbly's parents should have taken the sentence that they've been slapped with. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us. Warmer, sunnier days are calling. Fuel up for them with Factor's no prep, no mess meals. Meet your wellness goals in time for summer thanks to the menu of chef-crafted meals with options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you'll always have time to enjoy nutritious, great tasting meals. You know what often happens is we often make these goals to eat healthier, to eat better, and then you get so busy that you don't have time to go to the grocery store. You don't have time to plan a meal, or you're just so tired at the end of the day, you're not ready to cook. That's where Factor steps in, because you have these healthy meals, you get it out of the fridge, and it's ready in just a couple minutes, and you can stick to your goals and achieve what you want to achieve. Head over to factormeals.com/hearmeout50 and use code HEARMEOUT50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back. I'm Celeste Headley, and this is Hear Me Out, a podcast from Slate. Today, we are talking about who's responsible for school shootings in particular. In other words, when a child picks up a gun, are his parents liable? And our guest today, Kim Whaley, says the Crumbleys in particular and parents writ large shouldn't be held responsible for a lack of reasonable gun restrictions. And that, Kim, I totally agree with you on. I don't agree with you that the Crumbleys shouldn't have been sentenced to this harsh sentence. And the reason I say that is because this isn't really a precedent. This idea that this could set a precedent for other parents, I find that really hard to buy. I mean, every step of the way, the judges who heard this case or shared an opinion on this case kept repeating over and over how exceptional the details of this particular case was, that the bar was almost impossibly high here. You almost never get the kind of evidence that we had of negligence and absolutely irresponsible behavior as you do in this case. In fact, I went back and checked a panel of judges for the appellate court said, we share defendants' concern about the potential for this decision to be applied in the future to parents whose situation vis-a-vis their child's intentional conduct is not as closely tied together and the warning signs and evidence were not as substantial as they are here. But they said their concerns were significantly diminished by the fact that Ethan's actions were reasonably foreseeable, and that's the ultimate test that must be applied. I mean, I just don't see this as a slippery slope. I mean, it's hard enough to prove neglect or negligence. Really difficult. But in this case, there was such an abundance of evidence for, as they say, reasonably foreseeing what would happen. I don't think this sets a standard.
Well, 2 points. One is, just to be clear, as I said at the top of the show, I am not pulling out the violence for the Crumbleys. Yeah. I don't actually take issue with what the judge did. I'm making a bigger policy argument. So I'm not interested really, or as I know you've read,
yes,
the piece doesn't make the argument really that this is unfair to the Crumbleys. The piece makes the argument, like I've laid out here, that this is the wrong place to put our energies around controlling gun violence. On your other point, in terms of, okay, what's the standard of proof? How much negligence needs to be in place? You know, whether a judge sentences someone to a term for criminal negligence, which this is what, just so everyone's clear, there's nothing in the statute saying anything about guns. This is a generic, one size fits all criminal and negligence statute. Basically saying they should have done more, they should have known to do more, and that's what puts this from civil negligence, which would just be a tort, into the realm of a crime. That's a really big leap. That is taking someone's liberty away. And you could say, given the lack of precedence, I'm not sure that their lawyers made this argument, that they weren't really on notice that what they were doing could land them in jail. Now everyone else knows. So in a way, they are the canary in the coal mine. They are they're the fall guys. Now parents are on notice. Prior to this, they reasonably could have said, we had no idea, by not taking better care of our son, we could go to jail. Now, maybe that's a good thing from this, because people will be aware. And so maybe there's a trickle down effect. But I wanna push back on your point about judges. The issue isn't so much what happens at trial. The issue is, will prosecutors bring the case, right? A prosecutor can bring a case. You need to hire a lawyer or get a criminal defense, a public defender. In some states, they're way overworked. It's very hard to even get that kind of representation. It doesn't get triggered constitutionally, sometimes until later in the case. A prosecutor on a lesser set of facts could put families through the paces based on this precedent, because in many states, prosecutors are elected. People feel vindicated by this verdict. They might wanna be tough on crime because they wanna get their constituencies, the voters, to see, you know, we're clamping down on guns by going after this family. Now, ultimately, mom, in case the next case, might be might be acquitted. The jury might be a hung jury and they decide not to redo it. Maybe she'll get, there'll be a reversal on appeal. What happens to her and her family and her children going through that now that this thing has been established? I mean, I would argue, look at what happened with Dobbs. At the time that Dobbs came down, experts in the field, and I've done a lot of work on this, said there's no way they'll go after the women. There's no way they'll go after the pregnant people. That has happened in such a rapid clip, right? Everyone made that particular argument. And I would say, listen, the answer to the Crumbly's case, I mean, their fate is sealed in this moment. The answer to the Crumbly case is to now let's pass criminal negligence laws relating to gun ownership, so everyone understands what to expect. One other point. There was an argument this week in the United States Supreme Court on whether there should be immunity for presidents of the United States if they commit crimes. And the argument was made, listen, you need to make it really clear to presidents that if they do something, it could be a crime. So if the Supreme Court justices are making that argument with respect to the most powerful person on the planet, who already has civil immunity, who already, you know, already has all these protections, I think the same argument could apply to mom and dad, who obviously, you know, had and have severe problems, as did their son. Last point is obviously this child is the one who suffers. Who's, you know, it's a tragedy, of course, the deaths are horrific and the families that have suffered from the deaths. But I'm just saying, in terms of the policy around guns, Ethan himself should have had more inputs across the board. And I also wonder, you know, what does this mean for teachers? You could take this case and say, hey, the kid in your class did XYZ, all the warning signs were there, you didn't check his backpack. I mean, once you start, you open Pandora's box, there's no way to know whether prosecutors won't take this case and bring the case, even if it there's no conviction.
So, again, I feel like you and I are much more in agreement than we are in disagreement here. It's just this one final line. And I want to be clear that I understand, because I understood you to say that you felt that because Michigan law did not make their actions illegal when they happened, that I understood you to say that the Crumbly should not have been held criminally responsible for what their son did. Is that incorrect?
I think that's probably an overstatement. I don't have it in front of me. You can read it for me.
I don't have it in front of me either. But
no,
yeah.
I know. I'm not making my argument was to say, in that regard, the one that I just made, which is that there is a vagueness to this generic criminal negligence statute, first of all. But second of all, the main point was we as a society are not choosing to vote in legislators who, as a society, will draw that line, and we desperately need it as a country. We need those laws, and we're not willing to do that. And to me, it just doesn't make sense to me. We have seatbelt laws. We have people got so upset about, you know, masking during COVID, and there was a lot of pushback. We had a big discussion about how much government should intervene. If government should intervene, with gun legislation, I think that would be not just protect these six children that were murdered, but lots of people. And we're not doing that. And that's what I don't understand.
Yeah. And that part I completely agree with. And the vast majority of Americans agree with that. You know, it has been for many years a majority of opinion among Americans that we should have tighter gun controls, that we should have background checks, that there should be common sense laws in place dictating how you secure a firearm in the home, et cetera, et cetera. But I think we can have that and also hold parents accountable for criminal behavior on the part of their children. And I don't think, I mean, yes, this is the first time this kind of sentence has been handed down with these specific details. But again, I would say that the evidence was just absolutely overwhelming in the Crumbly's case, that they ignored all of the signs any reasonable person would pay attention to. But we've had other parents sentenced. A mother in Virginia got a 2-year prison sentence when her 6-year-old son brought a gun to his elementary school and shot his teacher. A father applied for a firearms permit on behalf of his son when his son was too young to apply, and he pleaded guilty and he had to go behind bars as well. I mean, the dad in Illinois pleaded guilty to reckless conduct charges because of the shooting at the parade in Highland Park. I mean, these things are precedented, And
but
I
those
think
are, you can distinguish a lot of those, what you just said.
I mean,
right?
Yes.
Pleading
but
guilty means that the government went after you, and it's easier to plead guilty than to put them to their proof, which is kind of my point. And you, you know, if you're going to buy a gun violating the purchase laws on behalf of your son, there you've crossed a legal boundary. What I'm trying to say isn't so much that these are good parents and that they shouldn't have been held accountable. What I'm saying is we are imposing on them legal restrictions that we are not, as a society, willing to push for,
right,
except, to protect the public writ large. That is my only point in the piece.
Except, let's take it one step further, because the law then did get changed in Michigan. Now,
right.
frankly, that law was specifically for parents, but and how you handle guns with minors. So
why would we need a law if the criminal negligence law was good enough, right? I mean, I think you can use that to prove my point, which is that the legislators realize we probably need this, and that generic law didn't do what it needed to do. I mean, the Crumblies, in a way, were scapegoated. Now, is it unfair? I just want to make, again, really clear. It's a horrible tragedy. I'm a mother of four. It was despicable and awful. How I agree with everything you're saying. I'm making a policy argument around, okay, we're awash in a gun scourge in the United States. And where is the accountability, and how is the accountability going to go? Is it going to go in individual prosecutors to stress generic laws to hold third parties accountable because we can't get anything done in another direction? That's a sad state of affairs. I don't think that's the way this should be coming down in terms of protecting the public.
So there's still more to talk about, and we will continue this conversation in a moment, but we do have to take a break. This is Hear Me Out. I'm Celeste Headley, and we will return.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of four episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
And we're back. This is Hear Me Out, a podcast from Slate. I'm Celeste Headley, and we're talking about who's responsible for making sure guns stop killing so many people, or the people who are pulling the triggers stop using guns to kill so many people. And my guest today is a legal expert, a law professor, writer, Kim Whaley, who says the Crumblies were scapegoated. Although, I mean, I'd have to argue, we were just talking about the Michigan law, and you were saying that the legislators in Michigan suddenly realized that the law they had wasn't good enough and that they needed to make a stronger law. I mean, I think that's kind of how laws end up getting made, isn't it? I mean, that's the process. I'm not excusing.
I hope we don't just wait till there are dead people before
any way,
we pass
shape or form
laws.
Although that is,
sometimes it does. But you just said.
Wait, let me finish.
Okay.
So that is how, sadly, tragically, it is usually how laws get made. Many of the laws they've used to prosecute January 6th rioters, for example, insurrectionists, were created after they realized that the KKK was murdering hundreds, if not thousands, of people. Like, that's how laws often end up getting passed. And unfortunately, that's kind of how gun laws should get passed. I mean, you would have think that after Sandy Hook, we would have seen more gun legislation passed. So, you know, I think there's something to be said for the fact that guns are really, really dangerous, and we need all kinds of people held responsible. I think parents should be held responsible. I also think gun manufacturers should be held responsible. I think gun salespeople should be held responsible. And I definitely think gun owners should be held responsible in the same way that we hold car makers responsible and car dealerships responsible and car owners responsible when something goes wrong that kills people in a vehicle. I don't think we should limit the people who end up being held accountable.
Well, I don't disagree with you either. I think there's a line between a tort, a civil tort, and a crime. I mean, and just to your point with the mother in
Virginia,
she was charged with felony child neglect and recklessly leaving a loaded firearm so as to endanger a child.
Yeah.
The Crumblies were charged as if they actually pulled the trigger. It's a different concept. They were not charged around neglecting their child in a reckless way. They were charged with causing the murder. And so it's kind of a nuanced legal argument. And I would also push back. I disagree that we need to have dead people to decide that we should have lockup guns in homes. I think we have plenty of statistical evidence. We have the numbers of people that are dying. The legislatures could sit down today without needing to have these tragedies happen, just like Congress does. They do all the time. They get experts. They say, should we have a new law on this? And they sort of thoughtfully gather information and make laws. I think we're well past the moment where we need more tragedies to get people off the dime. And that's my point. If everyone has so much energy around the Crumblies, and I'm very sympathetic to that. I mean, of course, you know, the poor families who lost their children, it's horrific. And there should be accountability. But focusing on the parents right now, that's what we have. That's terrible. That's not how policy should work. And this is a nightmare. This we stand out across the globe. We have more guns in America than human beings. And we have a Supreme Court that is enlarging the Second Amendment to make it harder to pass gun legislation. I think this is a rallying cry for people. I'm trying to wave the flag. Folks, this is bad. This is where it's come to. We're using generic manslaughter laws to hold parents accountable because our legislators won't do anything. The point of my piece is we need to focus on the real problem. The real problem is not the Crumblies. The real problem is that we are allowing these dangerous weapons to just be everywhere in America. That's a tragedy itself. And the problem there is not the Crumblies. The problem there are lawmakers and the Supreme Court.
I mean, I agree. Again, it's like I feel like a broken record here. I agree with just about everything that you just said. I think the legislators absolutely have been cowards. I never said we need more dead people. It's just that that's often how laws get passed, is because people die. But you're also correct that we've had more than enough death. As I said, one would think that their tolerance for lax gun legislation would have ended with Sandy Hook, and yet here we are. On the other hand, I think the problem, metaphorically speaking, is also the Crumblies. I think we have a lot of very irresponsible parents who don't see a gun. They see guns politically and they see guns symbolically, and they create a gun culture within their own families. And although I absolutely believe in people's right to embrace guns, to collect guns, to own guns, absolutely. However, I think that there should be a higher standard when it comes to allowing children to access guns. And if the Crumblies are the first of the parents held responsible, then I feel like that's okay. The number of kids who, as you mentioned, commit suicide, but also the number of accidental shootings where one child injures or even kills another child because a gun was made too accessible. It was not locked. It was loaded. I absolutely believe that the problem is the lack of a reasonable gun legislation. I believe the problem is aggressive lobbying that for somehow works. But I also think parents in the end have to be responsible for having a deadly weapon in their home that they allow children to access.
I don't disagree. I think we are 100% in agreement on that.
Great. Awesome.
Yeah. I think that the way this case was put together in particular is crossing a Rubicon.
I mean, you're a legal expert and I'm not. So I am not probably as skilled in recognizing legal Rubicons when I see them. But my instinct is to say this bar was just too high.
Well, you made a good point too. I mean, the culture of identifying with guns as if it's somehow American. I mean, we have members of Congress that send out Christmas cards,
yeah,
holding guns, and the judge
toddlers.
criticized the Yeah, the judge criticized the Crumbleys, Mrs. Crumbly in particular, for, you know, sort of creating this culture around guns. But that is our culture. So I guess to your point, if the Crumbleys are going to be held accountable, we should be holding everybody accountable.
And that's what
I
would agree
with. Same boat. That's another way of framing it, and I don't disagree with that.
I think that one of the things that makes it so difficult, though, Kim, is that anytime you bring up guns, because of this culture, people dig the trenches and will not even open themselves up to the idea of changing their minds. I mean, what kind of response did you get to your piece? Which I encourage all of our listeners to read, because as Kim mentioned, the headline does not really get into the nuance of what her argument is. But what kind of response did you get?
Yeah, I got from legal people. I had some response from lawyers who said, you're right, we shouldn't be criminalizing torts unless we're going to pass crime, you know, criminal statutes that criminalize torts. But then there were a lot of people that I think probably from the headline read me as saying that the Crumbleys were victims here and that the system was against them, or, you know, this is, and there was certainly a strong view that you need to take care of your kids and you need to keep dangerous things away from your kids. That I don't disagree with it. I'm a mom, and, you know, we could have a whole show on how many things were wrong with that story on so many levels, tragedies top to bottom. So I was surprised, though, by the reaction, which there were some that were quite negative. I got some pretty unkind feedback, and it kind of ties in with what you just said, which is that, you know, we're also not going to have a discussion around constraining guns, which maybe at the end of the day, scapegoat is the word. If you can't have that conversation and we have this anger towards this couple, there's a problem.
Well, that's as good a place to end as any, because if there's anything else this show encourages people to do, it's to actually listen to everything someone is saying and respond with, you know, facts and civility and respect. But I really appreciate it. We enjoyed the piece, and I'm so glad you're able to come on and talk to us about it more.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to explain it. I actually really, really appreciate it. And it was a terrific, lively discussion.
As we mentioned, any conversation about guns, gun violence, school shootings, mass shootings, generally leads to a high level of outrage, a justifiable outrage, and strong opinions. We know you have strong opinions on this issue, and guess what? We want to hear them. So email us. It's hearmeout@slate.com. Really, we want to know what you think. Last week, we had Professor Stephen Mintz on the show to argue that college students' protests can have unintended and serious political consequences that set us back rather than push us forward. That was, in light of current events, a pretty hot take, and it got you talking. So before we go, I want to share a comment. These comments came from Rudolph, who wrote in part, "The very conservative right is against everything public, transport, education, welfare, etc. Your guest should know this. Reagan took advantage of the student protests the way he took advantage of the air traffic controller strike. Of course, the emotional reaction comes first. Maybe he's right, and coalition building is wise, but young people are going to want to act now, and beginning a 10-year plan of attending meetings isn't sexy." Thank you very much, Rudolph. We love hearing from you. We love hearing all the things that you have to say, whether you agree with our guests or not. So let us know what is on your mind. It's hearmeout@slate.com. Hear Me Out is a podcast from Slate. The show is produced by Maura Curry. Ben Richmond is the Senior Director of Podcast Operations. And Alicia Montgomery is the VP of Slate Audio. I'm your host, Celeste Headley. Until next time, speak your mind, but please keep it open.